George Packer published an article in The New Yorker a little over a year ago about Iraqis who were hired to work for the American occupation as drivers, interpreters, and secretaries. He writes that the U.S. government treated the dangers these men and women went through every day as a bureaucratic nuisance. He's adapted their stories into a play called Betrayed, which is being performed at the Culture Project Soho Theater at 55 Mercer Street. And it runs through Monday, June 16th, so there isn't much more time to see it. I'm very pleased that it brings Mr. Packer back to the show today. Welcome.
Thanks again for having me.
When we originally planned to have you on the show to talk about this, we had to reschedule because you were about to travel to Burma or Myanmar. I don't know which one you use.
I call it Burma.
Did you go there?
I did. I went in February, and I'm trying to get back there. It's really difficult to get in, all the harder now after the cyclone. But I did spend about 8 or 9 days in February.
NPR's reporter who went there after the cyclone couldn't give his name because that would have put him in danger of arrest by the Burmese junta.
Yeah. It's impossible to do journalism there in the open way. You have to resort to all sorts of ruses and covers in order to be a journalist in Burma.
What about being a journalist in Iraq? Is it as difficult to report on only for different reasons?
Yeah, different reasons. In Burma, it's the government. In Iraq, it's the streets. It's the danger of the streets, the chaos. And really, since about the middle of 2004, the circle has closed in on the foreign press, and a lot of them have left because they just weren't able to do much more than kind of dive in for a targeted interview and then get the hell out of there as quickly as possible or rely on Iraqis to do it for them.
Because they're in danger of being kidnapped by an insurgent group or being blown up by an IED. What sorts of dangers do the Iraqis working for the occupation face coming to work every day? Pretty much the same stuff?
No, it's far more dangerous for them. First of all, because they live in the neighborhoods without security, and so anyone who figures out what they're doing for a living, whether they're working as an interpreter on a military base or in the green zone at the U.S. Embassy or even with a foreign journalist, once that's known, the word gets around. It's a very small country in a way, and they're defenseless, and they start to get threats, and eventually the threats may lead to killing. So they have the alternative of either living a double life and trying to keep it secret and hoping that the other shoe never drops, or moving onto a military base if possible and kind of cutting themselves off from the country, or simply fleeing Iraq.
Are they targeted by the same people who target Americans and other Western journalists, or are these different people who see them on a personal level as being traitors?
I'd say it's a wider threat because the people going after Western journalists are largely Al-Qaeda and the kidnapping rings who sell their hostages up to Al-Qaeda, whereas the Iraqis working with Americans are considered to be collaborators by a fairly large body of Iraqis, including the Shiite militias, including security forces of the Iraqi government, which is our ally there.
So why not allow them to live in the green zone?
I asked that question of a lot of officials when I went to Baghdad in January 07 to report this story, and I heard all sorts of bureaucratic answers. Well, we don't have enough trailers. We give them 2 weeks.
They should call FEMA. They can get trailers.
You know, it's like FEMA. I mean, it's that level of, as I said, bureaucratic indifference, incompetence, et cetera. And there's a sense in which it's a nuisance that they just want the Iraqis to deal with. And they even give sort of, I think, false stories like Iraqis would rather live with their families. Well, of course they would, unless they're about to get beheaded, in which case they might prefer a trailer in the green zone.
Weren't you a supporter of the invasion of Iraq at first? Have you changed your mind about whether or not we should have gone to war with Iraq, or are you just disillusioned by the way the occupation has been handled?
I was, I have, and I am. I was a pretty torn supporter, but on March 19th, 2003, I had to admit to myself that I wanted this to happen and I wanted it to succeed. And having gone to Iraq half a dozen times and spent the last 4 or 5 years thinking about it, writing about it, I have to conclude it was a mistake, which leads to one realization, which is we shouldn't have done it. I mean, but it's history that's shown me that. I didn't think that at the time.
Well, I just spoke to Scott McLellan, who talks about why we actually went there and what really happened. But perhaps we all were deceived to some degree by a campaign. What about the Iraqis? Your play begins with a monologue from one character who loves all things American. Were most Iraqis sympathetic to the Americans at the beginning of the war? Or were there were there still some people who were going to be intractable no matter what?
Both are true. There were going to be the intractable opponents of the invasion, and most of those were either members of the old regime or people who had benefited from the old regime, or perhaps in a wider sense, Sunnis who saw this as inevitably as a Shiite takeover of the country, and it became a sectarian struggle. But there were many other Iraqis, including, I would say, a majority of Shia and the vast majority of Kurds, who may have been skeptical of our intentions, may have been wary of us, certainly didn't greet us with the wild enthusiasm that Dick Cheney and others predicted, but who were willing to accept it and wait and see what it brought them because the alternative had been intolerable to them.
Were those Sunnis who were afraid that this was going to lead to a Shiite takeover, feeling any guilt at the fact that they had suppressed the Shiite majority for all those years?
I have found in general that the sense of responsibility and guilt for the past is rather light on the ground in Iraq. I have not heard too many members of the former regime talk about their complicity and their anguish over their complicity. Instead, everyone feels like a victim. The Sunnis now feel like victims. The Shia feel like historical victims. The Kurds have been historical victims. So you don't find too many people like the Germans after World War II who came to a painful realization that they were to blame.
Have you found it more difficult to locate Iraqis who'll talk openly with you now?
Yeah. I mean, this story, the story of the interpreters, was extremely hard to do because they just don't want to be seen with Westerners. One man who lived in a southern Iraqi city insisted that we fly together to Kurdistan and spend 3 or 4 days in a hotel talking there, which we did. Others said, I will only meet you in the green zone at this place and this time. Others said, I can't go anywhere near the green zone. We'll have to meet in a hotel room in downtown Baghdad. And so we went to elaborate measures to cover up the fact that we were meeting each other, talking together. They don't accept cell phone calls, so a lot of it was by text message or by intermediary, et cetera, et cetera. So it's an extremely tense atmosphere. But once we started talking, the stories just poured out, and they were heartbreaking stories of hope and disappointment and betrayal.
Well, after the war was won and mission was accomplished, many people probably saw this as a chance to get a job.
A job?
What job opportunities were available to them?
Interpreter at the embassy was sort of the highest of the jobs. Office jobs, IT jobs, and then jobs going out on patrol with soldiers. And some Iraqis were afraid of that, and some young men thought that was pretty cool and welcomed it. But you're absolutely right. For especially this younger generation, Iraqis under 30 who spoke some English, this was a marvelous opportunity, and they flocked to the gates of the Green Zone to try to get the jobs.
And how soon before they were disillusioned?
It took a long time. Iraqis, as one Iraqi said to me, and this is in my play, it's very hard for us to give up hope. This is what kept us living under Saddam, was the hope that things would get better. And they remained hopeful for a long time under the Americans that things would get better. And even after their colleagues began to be killed, they saw videotape beheadings, they got death threats themselves, many of them stayed in the job, and their tenacity and their courage is pretty admirable.
Well, some of the lines in the play are taken verbatim from your interviews, and one person says, sometimes I feel like we're standing in line for a ticket waiting to die.
Yeah, that was something I heard from an Iraqi in Baghdad last January, and at that time, that was absolutely the atmosphere. They were being killed one by one. There were all sorts of ways you could be killed. You could have happened to be in the wrong place and get blown up by a car bomb, or you could get a bullet with your name on it. But their friends were being killed, their relatives were being killed, and it just felt like a matter of time before they were going to be killed.
Well, in the show, we see a line they must wait on for an hour each day to enter the green zone. Now, these are people who are working for the Americans. Why does it take so long?
This was a basic question I asked over and over at the embassy. Why can't you upgrade their security clearance from yellow to green. I mean, that was really all it took, so that they can get inside the green zone gate and be searched on the inside, rather than wait with all the other Iraqis who had business that day in the green zone for an hour or more and be subject to car bombs and to spies. And the answer was, well, it's too difficult, or the soldiers rotate too often for us to institute a system that works, just pure bureaucracy. And I began to feel as if there was bad will, bad faith on the other end.
Well, that's what I was asking about the disillusionment, because it seems like initially the Iraqis were very optimistic, but the Americans had contempt for many Americans had contempt for them from the start.
You know, on the individual level, there are friendships, there is good feeling, and many individual Americans have tried very hard to get their Iraqi colleagues out of Iraq or to help them in other ways. But institutionally, you're absolutely right. Indifference and contempt has been the norm, and it's taken 4 or 5 years and pressure from advocates and from Iraqis even to get to the point where we're beginning to admit a few of them into this country, but the pace is much too slow.
You have some of them taking polygraph tests in the play. Now, lie detector tests are notoriously suspect. What do they think they're going to get from that? Are you a terrorist?
Yeah, there's a great fear that some of these Iraqis coming into work are going to be working for the enemy. And in some ways, that's a justifiable fear. But what's not justifiable is to use the polygraph to catch them in the slightest mistake and to ask questions like, have you ever had sex with a male, that is going to force them to either choose their sense of honor or to lie or to feel humiliated. And so it's as if a trap has been set. And so many Iraqis fell into that trap and were fired. Some of them even ended up in Abu Ghraib for a few weeks. And it began to feel as if they had no friends at all. The insurgents were after them. The militias were after them. The Iraqi government didn't like them. And even their American employers and friends seemed to be after them as well. So that's when they began to feel so alone that some of them started to leave the country.
Was it better for the women than the men?
A little bit. Yeah, I think the women were treated slightly better, but they were also subject to some harassment, et cetera. But in the end, they're all equally targeted. And the worst of it is the taint will never go away. They will never be safe in their own country. As soon as someone finds out what they did after 2003, they will have to fear for their lives.
George Packer's Betrayed is being performed at the Culture Project Soho Theater at 55 Mercer Street through Monday the 16th, that's 2 weeks from now. How many Iraqis have been killed as a result of working for the Americans? Do we know?
I don't know the exact number, but I could say it's in the hundreds. And many more have had to cut themselves off from their families, have given up their lives, in a sense, in order to hold this job. They stop seeing their old friends. They don't tell their parents what they're doing for a living. They move their families out of the country for safety. It has been a catastrophic disruption of life at best for everyone who takes these jobs. And we all owe them a great deal. And it's a shame that until now, at the highest level, at the White House, that debt of honor has not been paid.
Do we know how many Iraqis are employed now as compared to right after the war?
The number at the embassy has been steadily dropping as they have been fleeing. And they're being replaced by Jordanians and even citizens from the Republic of Georgia, because it seems to the diplomats in Baghdad to make more sense to hire foreigners who don't know the country at all but who will live in the green zone and be protected there than to hire people who could be a risk coming in. And that is part of the perversity of the situation.
And Georgians speak Russian. They don't speak Arabic.
They don't speak Arabic. They know nothing about Iraq. And even Jordanians don't know Iraq. You can only get Iraqis to do the job, and we just don't trust them enough to do it.
Well, you've called the play Betrayed. Are we talking about Betrayed because we won't let them in the U.S., or are we talking about Betrayed on a much larger level?
I think the betrayal is deep, and it's, in a sense, the worst betrayal is something a friend said after seeing my play. It's as if they believed in our promises more than we did. These Iraqis took us seriously, and we didn't take ourselves seriously. And that, to me, is a moral betrayal.
Why a play rather than a book?
I wanted these Iraqis to be able to speak for themselves. I'd come back from that trip with my head just seething with with their words, their stories. And the article I wrote, although it was 16,000 words, felt like it couldn't quite do justice. And a play allowed them to step forward, get me out of the way, and speak directly to American audiences and to each other, and to bring Americans into their world in a way that would be immediate and in a way more alive than reading it in a magazine or a book.
While I was at the show, I heard a man nearby say, they should show this at the White House. But do you think that George Bush doesn't know all of this is happening?
Well, Scott McClellan has painted a picture of a president who doesn't want to know and who seems to believe his own version of the war at any given moment. And I think in this case, he believes that these Iraqis are needed in Iraq and that life there is getting better and that we're going to protect them. My guess is George Bush is not cynical enough to think that it will look bad and so we'd better not let the Iraqis into this country. But it amounts to the same thing.
It's an unfortunate part of this is we couldn't have some Iraqis come here and perform in your play.
That's true, but Iraqis have seen it and have talked to me about it afterward. And what they've said is, for me, the highest praise, because to them it felt like their real lives.
George Packer's Betrayed is being performed at the Culture Project Soho Theater at 55 Mercer Street through Monday the 16th of this month. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks, Leonard.